Chapter 4. Stavius. Stavius awakened with a thick, coppery taste in his mouth. He was disoriented, the ground was still slightly moving, and he couldn't feel his body. Well, he couldn't feel most of his body. There was something like a rock poking him in his back. He realized it was his own arm when his shoulder erupted in pain as he tried to roll off of it. Stavius squinted at his arm after pulling it out from under him and was amazed at its size. He brought the hand close to his face to inspect it, then extended his arm until it was outstretched above him as he laid on his back in the soft summer grass. He could make it move around like one of those claw games in an arcade, but its unfamiliar size and appearance, combined with a total lack of feeling, made it seem disconnected and surreal. He closed his eyes to try to gather his thoughts, and something immediately dropped onto his abdomen. He quickly sat up in fright, only to lean back in relief when he discovered that it was just that arm again. "Oh, this is strange," he thought to himself as he struggled to lean against the tree. He was starting to regain feeling in his body, bit by bit. He could feel his back, right arm, and intestines, which felt like they were sloshing onto his lap. They weren't, but he had to look to make sure. His panic began to subside as more of his body came back to life. His rapid breathing and racing heart had slowed to more normal rates by the time he was finally able to feel his entire body, including his face, which was still aching from Cran's sucker punch. Stavius cautiously stood and looked up into the trees. Smelling the summer fragrances and listening to the cacophony of bird songs, chattering squirrels, and rushing river made him marvel at the peacefulness of this valley. Then he realized that one thing he didn't hear. Mark's voice was no longer in his head. In fact, Staven wasn't there either, and yet he was. Stavius realized he was Mark, and that he was also Staven. All of their fears of being lost were misplaced. Both were still there and a part of him. Stavius chuckled as he realized that he had lost nothing and gained much. The young man suddenly dropped into a horse stance, threw two straight punches, a cross punch, and a front kick. Mark knew martial arts. His parents had forced him to take it for 4 long years. But he had always hated it, and finally convinced them to let him quit after passing his red belt test. The problem was that, while he knew all the moves, being an overweight kid with a lame arm meant that he was never able to do more than go through the motions. Now, however, Stavius was a powerfully built 17-year-old man, suddenly possessing impressive mixed martial arts skills. Stavius laughed and spent several minutes punching, kicking, jumping, and even doing some flips until he was panting and covered with sweat. He had never felt this alive before, which might not mean much since Stavius was all of 10 minutes old, but he knew that neither Mark nor Staven had ever felt so good either. He took a breath, turned around, and his jaw dropped. Stavius had been facing away from the village while doing his routines. He was unprepared for what he saw when he turned around. The community was quaint, immaculate, and populated with beautiful people dressed in simple but tasteful clothing. It was an odd sensation, like deja vu, because while this was how Mark remembered it, Staven had seen it differently. Stavius felt that he had both been here before and was seeing it for the very first time. He walked to a nearby cottage and ran his hand along the wall.
His fingers sank an inch beneath the smooth, weathered stone wall and felt a rough surface underneath.
It was an illusion. Staven was seeing illusions for the first time through Stavius's eyes. The village was so much more beautiful than Staven remembered.
Stavius recalled Myra's advice about perspectives and stepped back and tried to see the village from Staven's point of view.
The ivy-covered cottage walls began to fade as he concentrated until he was staring at a poorly constructed hut made from sticks, leaves, and mud. Someone had jammed a few large branches into the ground and woven some smaller ones between them. They then magically transformed this rickety structure into stone and slathered mud and leaves over the top. They must have repeated this mud, leaves, and magical transformation process until they had the desired shape. Then they enchanted it for strength and weatherproofing, finally wrapping it with a stone, thatch, and ivy illusion. Stavius looked around and now saw the village as Staven remembered it, a squalid collection of mud and leaf huts. He also saw the people as they appeared to Staven. Most were in their 30s to 50s, with a few who had to be in their upper 70s.
Nearly all were overweight, with dirty, tousled hair, walking about in torn, old clothes, or just in their underwear, or, in some cases, completely naked.
Stavius quickly reverted to Mark's perspective, and the frail, elderly woman shuffling towards them magically transformed into the pretty teenager, Mayra. "So, did you manage to merge?" she asked with a flirtatious wink.
Yeah, I did," answered Stavius, who no longer found himself attracted to the buxom beauty taking his arm.
"You were right. It's pretty amazing." He was trying to come up with an excuse to get out of her unrelenting grasp when the village clock chimed 3 times. He screamed, "Oh, Tara, help me! We're late for Ertisha's class!" as he raced toward the cave. Stavius dashed into the cave a good 10 minutes late, realizing he had no idea where to go once he arrived. That question, at least, was answered when he entered the large cavern hall and espied a single chair placed in front of a blackboard. He dashed to the chair and sat down, hoping that he had successfully snuck in, since he did not see Ertish. Stavius realized he was wrong as a voice echoed from the darkness behind him.
"Mr. Stavius, your tardiness shows a complete lack of respect for me, for my time, and for this subject," complained Ertish.
"I'm sorry, I wasn't sure where to go," said Stavius. His excuse was valid, but not the real reason he was late.
"Oh, please, Mr. Stavius, I don't want to hear your pathetic excuses, and I am insulted by the fact that you think you can sneak by me when you are the only student. Did you think I wouldn't notice you suddenly filling the only empty chair? I'm here to try to teach you some history, Mr. Stavius, and yet I don't think you're interested in learning. I think that you would rather run around wrestling in the field, am I right?"
"Well, it does seem that a history class might not be the best use of our time. I mean, we'll have to trim things to shorten the training time, right?" Stavius said with more than a little hope in his voice.
"Those who cannot remember the past are condemned to repeat it," argued Ertish.
"That's a famous quote from Marius's world. Are you familiar with it?"
Yeah, I've heard it, or something like it," said Stavius. "And do you know who said it?" asked Ertish.
No," admitted Stavius.
"It's a quote from the early 20th century philosopher and writer George Santania," said Ertish, "and I think that it should have special meaning to you, young man."
"Why is that, sir?"
"Because young men and women like yourself have been heading off to fulfill the prophecy for thousands of years, and almost every single one of them was slaughtered. I would think that someone in your position might want to strive not to repeat that particular past."
Mark never liked history class, and Staven had never even had one. But Ertish had suddenly motivated Stavius to eagerly follow every word as he began his first lecture on the history of this world and the prophecy they were attempting to fulfill.
"There are few literate people in this world, which means that much of the known history is based upon oral stories handed down across generations.
Many stories are from this world's several religions, which, while divergent in some beliefs, all share the same core teachings.
There were also some historical logs and a few ancient artifacts, which provided some guidance for the conjoined historians who passed through from time to time. The stories claim that roughly 6,000 years ago, a group of gods came and brought magic to the earth. Very little is known about the world before their appearance, but the stories all agree that Janus was the first to arrive and that he pretty much wiped out whatever he found. The 4 savior gods, Terra, Mars, Luna, and Venus, came before he could complete his destruction and saved our world and the 3 others with their magical energy. Every religion on Earth agrees with this origin story. They also all concur that Janus made a prophecy before he was banished. In it, he advised the pious to construct 7 sacred talismans which would reward them with unmatched power. He also predicted that someday a group of young heroes in their prime would arrive as representatives of the gods to lay claim to those talismans to restore the world. Despite the similar origin stories, however, several religions arose which cannot seem to get past their differences to see their commonality. Terrans, the most numerous, depict Janus as an evil demigod who was stopped by the 4 savior gods before he could complete his destruction. Resurrectionist Janarians believe that Janus judged everything and everyone on Earth, Luna, Mars, and Venus, and destroyed all but the righteous, whom the gods then graced with magic. And the New World Janarians believe that he merely prepared 4 lifeless worlds for the coming gods. Interpreting what restoring the world means is another branching point for these religions. Some believe the prophesied heroes will use the talismans to bring the gods back. Some prophesize they will be used to restore the world's magical energy, which appears to be dwindling. Others suspect that the so-called heroes will use the power of the talismans to wipe out the world and start over, much like what Janus and the Four Gods did 6,000 years ago. So, while very few people are fans of Janus, none of the prophecy heroes are favored by everyone. Ertish warns Stavius that he should be especially careful around those who are enjoying the fruits of the talisman's powers.
That evening, Stavius gazed up at the stars thinking about Ertish's lesson. He stared at the two brilliant blue points of light, Mars and Venus, which were far brighter than any other stars, and wondered if people like him lived there. Then he turned his attention to the full moon and marveled at her deep blue oceans, green continents, and slowly swirling clouds. He contemplated how similar and how different this world was from Mark's, and decided he was happy he lived here.